from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Glad to be with you today here on Sports Daily. Hey, the Shockers are taking over the fairgrounds. I'll be out there later today. The Shockers will be out there for Shocker Sunday at the Kansas State Fair on September 15th. Make it out to Hutchinson for a Shocker-filled day at the fair. Tune in at 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. So for an hour on 97.5, 1240 right here on KFH, an on-site live show featuring special Wichita State guests. So we're excited about that. Tune into that 11 to noon on Sunday. I'll tell you, the fair, Tommy, I'd heard from some of my colleagues that this weekend was as busy as they've ever seen it. And then yesterday was Dollar Day, so it was packed. I asked my guy over at the gyro stand, gyro stand, if he, like what he thought. And he said it has been a fantastic fair. That's awesome. I'm happy for the state fair folks. I don't think it's going to rain. I just, you know, everyone wants the rain, and usually the fair brings some rain, but it didn't bring the rain. So, it's the fair. You fair. What's your favorite fair food?
I'm always a Pronto Pup person. I've been a Pronto Pup guy my entire life. That's like the fair, like the vintage fair quintessential food. So give me that over anything else. Maybe like a hand-squeezed lemonade or something like that to go alongside a Pronto Pup. I'm pretty simple. I don't need to go crazy or wild with anything else. I'll tell you, part of the reason, as a guy that has grown up here and been around this area my entire life, the Kansas State Fair brings one of two things typically. Either 110-degree weather or it pours nonstop. And right. So the fact that you've got beautiful weather, like over the weekend was gorgeous for the opening weekend, it's going to be really nice all week long. It's going to be warmer, but it's not going to be brutally hot. I can definitely understand why it's been, you know, pretty well attended so far.
Yeah, look, the weather helps. Dollar Days helped. I'll be curious to see how it is out there today. We always appreciate everybody stopping by and saying hello. So do that. Jake Balbrock, Tommy Kester here. It is Sports Daily. We'll have Dan Israel in just a second. We're getting a little bit of a connection issue. Tommy, Chiefs, Bengals, initial thoughts, and we'll get into this with Dan. When you hear that, when you see a 6-point spread, what's your gut say on that?
I'm going to lay the points. I mean, right away, I don't think that there's any question with that because of what we saw from both teams in week number one. It just, to me, and I know that there's going to be more analysis as the week goes on, but to me, at least right now, that seems like a pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, I would be inclined to do the same. Now, if this was week 13, I might feel a little different about that. Let's bring in Dan Israel. We just lost Dan again on his video. Well, Jad, why don't we just give Dan a call? And we'll just do it that way.
Well, Dan is there. We don't necessarily have to. There he is. He's back. We got him.
Okay. All right, Dan. Let's see if this works. Dan, I know we're having a little bit of a connection issue. We'll see how this goes.
Can you hear me actually?
We got you. So Dan Israel, executive producer of Chiefs Radio Network, our Chiefs insider for a lot of years now. We always appreciate Dan's insight. The Bengals laid an egg. The Bengals lay a lot of eggs early in seasons, even when they're really good. I surmise that's probably about where we're at. I don't know if T. Higgins is bouncing back from a hamstring injury. 6 points at home. That seems pretty appealing. You know, again, if this was week 13, maybe a little bit different, but in week two here, that feels pretty good. I mean, if you're going to get the Bengals, this is when you want to get the Bengals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Watching them Sunday, they look really anemic. And I think, you know, you can only put so much on one guy and they just didn't have what it took, you know? And I do think their offense is somewhat like ours, where there's a complexity to it. And as you mentioned, the earlier you are in the season, the worse it is for them. They're just not refined yet. They'll probably be there in the end. We'll probably see them in the playoffs. But I do think, you know, right now, the way they looked Sunday, it's not much to scare you when you look at the Chiefs and what they were able to accomplish against the Ravens.
Dan, I think predictably with Kansas City on that opener, you know, some of the biggest issues that the Chiefs had defensively containing Lamar Jackson and on the ground. And that's what Jackson does. That's what he does against every team. But it definitely seemed like, you know, that was the issue. I think, you know, going into the game, everybody had kind of pinpointed that, and it kind of came to fruition there. Knowing that, you know, they're playing the Bengals this week, Joe Burrow is not as mobile as Lamar Jackson is. They're not going to put, you know, Burrow in that kind of position, especially with, you know, the injury history that Joe Burrow has had. So at least in that regard, defensively for Kansas City, it looks like this should be at least a better matchup as far as the way that the Chiefs defense likes to play.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, and after the game, I go down in the locker room. My first duty is to go in and talk with Coach Reed. And so he meets with Clark Hunt and Brett Veach and everybody immediately. Then he meets with me. While they were meeting, I was sitting outside his office door in the hallway just waiting. And Steve Spagnuolo walked by me, and he comes straight up to me, puts his hands on my shoulders and says, "I sometimes don't think we're ever going to get that guy stopped." And I thought, "Yeah, Coach, that's just the way that guy is." And frankly, I thought we saw even a little bit in Lamar Jackson the same thing we saw in the AFC Championship last year, which is when they put it on his shoulders, he's not able to do it. And, you know, I don't know why you'd be third and goal or, you know, 3 yards from the goal line and not give it to Derrick Henry, but whatever that – The Chiefs, I thought, did a great job, and I thought Leo Chanel did an outstanding job for his first effort in spying somebody. Got a little involved in traffic. You know, he needs to stay out of traffic, not let people get his hands on him. But I thought he did a great job with Lamar Jackson. But to your point, Tommy, none of that is going to exist against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
Now, I do think they can run the football. They certainly Burrow can throw, but the receiver situation there with, you know, how much is Chase going to be ready this week? And it's just been a mess. T. Higgins, as you mentioned, is I mean, that's not an easy recovery, right? That's not – when you're a guy that's supposed to run fast down the field, a hamstring really hamstrings you. And so I think it's going to be one of those situations where I just don't know how they come into Kansas City full power. And Arrowhead's not an easy place to play. That's just all there is to it.
I think – there's so much to gather up on this. So as it pertains to the Bengals too, like Ja'Marr Chase didn't practice all offseason. They don't have T. Higgins. They don't have Joe Mixon anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Burrow, like there are so many things with the Bengals that they're going to have to get sorted out. That's what I mean. Getting them now feels like a win already for the Chiefs. Not that I think, well, I do think they're going to win the game, but you know, the Bengals are going to be very different 5-6 weeks from now. And they always start slow anyway. I don't know why that is, but they do. And the Burrowhead thing sits there for the Chiefs. This is a motivation game for the Chiefs. It's a motivation game for Chiefs fans. When we look at the Ravens, it just is such a different offense, right? Lamar Jackson gives you trouble. Joe Burrow's not going to give you trouble in that way. I thought as far as the defense goes, which was a concern, not a concern, but a question, I guess, for the Chiefs going in, that's as good as I would have expected them to look. Bend don't break, a little old school there. It'll be a totally different type of test with Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. But how would you grade that first, you know, new defense in a lot of ways, defense for the Chiefs?
You know, yeah, Jacob, I think one of the things for the Chiefs defense that had us concerned was they hadn't been able to play together in camp. Reed didn't play at all. You know, you had Nick who was injured. You had Chris who was in and out. And so for a lot of that, you never had all three levels practice together and go through preseason together. And this was kind of their first time together. And so I thought you saw the same thing for the Ravens offensive line. They kept just bonehead penalty after bonehead penalty because they hadn't played together. So I think for the Chiefs defense, that first outing just to get the reps was really, really important. And I know it was by a quarter of an inch or a toenail, however you want to say it, but they got the stop at the end of the game when they needed it. And so I feel like surviving week one was a good goal for the Chiefs defense. Now we got to kind of see it come together. Nick Bolton's got to play better. I mean, that's just all there is to it. Without Willie Gay there, he's got a lot more cover to do. And so I think you'll see this kind of new defense. You know, Spagnuolo's so creative. We know we're going to see Drew Tranquil in coverage. We're going to see – you know, Justin Reed dropping down and blitzing. And this is just the way Spagnuolo works. But all of that's got to be refined over the coverage. You got to have coverage first. You've got to be able to contain. And I thought they did a pretty good job against the really tough Ravens. I mean, Derrick Henry really wasn't that effective. So I guess to some, and I will say too, Chris Jones was absolutely gassed. I mean,
why Dan, are they putting him on the end? Can we not do that again? Can we not put him on the edge again? That was my biggest complaint about the opener was that they had Jones lined up wide. Yeah. Is that an indictment on the opposite of George Karlaftis? Are we going to see that? Because it didn't work the first time. I don't think that we did it. Chris Jones is a Chris Jones weapon in the middle.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
I think they're trying to take advantage of matchups. You know, I think they think they can get Chris Jones on a tackle sometimes where he might not be able to get through the guard center, you know, the A gap. And so I think they're moving him around just for creativity. I don't think it's an indictment on George, but I do think it's hampering George. He's not in the same technique every time. He's not in the same position. So he's kind of learning multiple skill sets all at the same time. And, and George is, you know, look, he's not a rookie, right? I mean, he's at this point, he should be past a lot of that stuff. But I didn't think he necessarily had his greatest game on Thursday. And, you know, I think with Aminahu not being, I mean, that all of these things kind of factor in there. They got to get Cam in there. They got to get, you know, there's just a lot they've got to do. And so I think they're moving Chris around to kind of just, you know, maybe experiment with different formations and give Chris an advantage here and there. But I think sometimes it's to the detriment of the other guys, you know, because therefore when Chris goes to the edge has to come in, right? Now you got George Karlaftis, and I love George, but he's not a huge guy, right? I mean, he's my height. And well, no, I guess he's bigger. He's a little taller than me, but I feel like that's not necessarily the best place for George. So I think sometimes it's to the detriment of the other guys. But man, I also throw in here, who am I to question Steve Spagnuolo?
I get it.
You know, you mentioned Nick Bolton and his performance on Thursday night, and I agree with you. I think that, you know, that's got to be a priority moving forward, is figuring out for Steve Spagnuolo how to put Bolton in the best position to have success. Because, I mean, there were some plays he was running all over the field. And I know that, you know, that early on, one of the first drives for the Ravens, they marched down the field, they score. And the only thing that kept coming to mind was, man, the Chiefs miss Willie Gay Jr. That was the first thing I thought about. And as the game went on, I think the defense, especially at the linebacker position, settled down a little bit. I will say, from a positive perspective, I was really impressed with Leo Chenal. And I know that Chenal has had flashes. He had flashes last season and things like that. But he's got a motor on him. And, you know, he was all over the place, I felt like. So at least for me, even though Bolton struggled some, I thought Leo Chenal more than made up for it defensively.
Yeah, I was, I don't want to say shocked, because I've seen flashes out of Chenal. But that's the most consistent starter-like performance I've seen him do. And it's probably the most reps he's gotten in a long time, too. But I feel like, you know, they've got to kind of – Nick can't go sideline to sideline like Derek Johnson. He's not built like that. He's a – you know, he's a big, muscular guy. I think Drew Tranquil's more that guy. You know, he's a little slimmer, a little faster. But they've got to figure that out. And it's funny you mention that, because now I realize at the end of the game, we let a tight end go wide open, and that was on our cornerback, right? And I get that. So yes, we miss Snead. But I think in a lot of ways, you're absolutely right. I almost think the bigger loss was Willie Gay Jr. And, you know, when you're talking about a guy, a linebacker, you're talking about a guy who's responsible for both the run and the pass, as opposed to Snead really was a pass guy, right? So I do think that the loss of Willie Gay is going to be something they have to overcome, and they're going to have to do it with scheme too, because those guys don't grow on trees. That talent isn't just there for the picking, but it sure was refreshing to see Chenal step up and go, well, you know, maybe we've got more depth there than we thought.
We'll get to the offense in a second. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. So it was interesting that the receivers for Baltimore didn't do a ton of damage, but Isaiah likely did a ton of damage. The Bengals are going to be such a different offense to see the defense defend. I don't even know how much we take away from it. The Bengals don't have a great tight end. They, in theory, have some really good wide receivers. They don't have a running quarterback. Like, it's just a very different type of test, I think. But when the Chiefs play teams with good tight ends, do you think likely was a one-off, or do you think this, again, is something that could hurt them down the stretch, the ability to cover a good tight end?
Well, I want to think likely was a one-off, but I think, you know, this is the test, right? I mean, if we go into week 3 and 4 and this is a repeating kind of issue, they've got to figure it out. And you know, he was so open on that near side end zone. I mean, 7 yards, you can't give even a tight end 7 yards in the NFL. That's too open. And so I want to think there was just some blown coverages, and it's just maybe us not coming up to speed as quick, the defense not coming up to speed as quick, but we'll see this week, because I feel like, you know, if you're going to have, again, if the Bengals were maybe the toughest game we're going to play all year, and let's say that was on a scale of 0 to 10, that was a 7 or an 8 threat. The Bengals, having watched them with my own eyes on Sunday, the Bengals look like a 3, 4, 5 now. I mean, I just don't think it's going to be that hard. So I hope, and look, I will say this. I think the Bengals will fight all 60 minutes. I think it'll be a game all the way to the end. And if the Chiefs make mistakes, the Bengals will capitalize on them. But if the Chiefs play well, I think it's an opportunity for the defense to kind of get their feet under them and kind of come together and figure out the things that maybe they didn't do as well as they should have in the Ravens game.
We've gone this far, Dan, and not really talked about Xavier Worthy and the debut that he had in a Chiefs uniform. I mean, it was just phenomenal from him offensively. And, you know, it's hard to not think about the fact that they were able to get him to take the top off of defenses without Hollywood Brown playing either. And so it's one of those things where, man, you would think as soon as they can get Brown back, you know, Mahomes should have a lot of fun with both of those receivers on top of everybody else they have, like Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce.
Yeah, it was so fun to watch. I just, you know, this kid's the real deal. And you know, there's that old saying, if he's even, he's leaving, kind of in the NFL. And man, we saw that. If the guy has 2 feet on you, you're toast. 2 feet. I mean, if he's an arm length away from you, you are not catching him. And it's fun to see. And it's that kind of Tyreek Hill speed that we were missing. And I love his attitude, man. He is one of those guys that just sits in the, you know, he's quiet, he studies, he prepares, he works. And if this rookie is anything like what we saw in week one, man, is it going to be a fun season? And to your point, it isn't just Worthy. It isn't just Worthy, but he was absolutely fun to watch on Thursday, no doubt.
So the Chiefs put up 27 points. I joked about this on social media. I just said that, you know, all this without Hollywood Brown, good luck. But they put up 27 points on a defense we know at the end of the year will be a top 10 defense. They always are.
Yep.
Travis Kelce touched the ball only 3 times. Worthy, who was great, only touched the ball 3 times.
Yeah.
So those, all of that factors in. They still scored 27 points. Hollywood Brown touched the ball 0 times.
Yeah.
So you had 6 combined touches between Hollywood Brown, Xavier Worthy, and Travis Kelce, and they put up 27 points on the Ravens. That, I've said it all off season. This feels like another, you know, 4,000 yard or 5,000 yard, 40 touchdown kind of year for Mahomes. When they're healthy, if they ever get healthy at the same time, I don't know how teams are going to slow them down. I just don't. Like, and that's not being a homer. That's being realistic. Like, yeah. I don't know how teams are going to defend them if they're ever fully healthy together.
Yeah, I you know, when we talk about the offense is back, baby, man, it really is. And I feel like we get better offensively as we go through the year as well. And so, you know, to see these flashes in week one that are, I mean, 27 points against a tough defense. The one thing they were right from the Ravens defense right from the gate is physical. And I was so impressed with the Chiefs came out and they were fast and maybe, if not as physical, maybe a little more physical than the Ravens. And that surprised me because that is not what we typically do. We have to come out and kind of come up to speed. You know, the first quarter, we looked like we're almost in slow motion sometimes. And so I was really impressed with the physicality that they were playing and offensively. And when you look at Worthy, well, first of all, if I'm a Buffalo fan, I would want a grand jury indictment about how these things keep happening. They have to be saying, how did we trade this pick? How did they get this kid? I mean, why? Why? I said on draft night, if I were a member of the Buffalo Bills organization, I would say, if the call ID starts with an 816 or a 913, don't answer it. You know, just don't pick up the phone. But I think, you know, getting Worthy in there and seeing him do so much with three touches, I'm not even sure we've seen that. I mean, I guess we saw moments of that, like with Tyreek, but it's just phenomenal to watch. And again, it's the start of it. I'm with you, man, Tommy or Jacob. I don't see how, you know, some of these defenses we play this year, we're going to put 45 points on.
Well, let's be fair. It was busted coverage and a sweep play generated 14 of those points.
Yeah.
So is that, you know, repeatable? I kind of think it is, right? A mistake for the Chiefs turns into points far more often than other teams. They're just explosive. One other question for you, Dan, maybe the biggest question coming into the offseason, left tackle. Yeah. What are you hearing on his performance from the – it's hard for us, I think, as fans to truly evaluate how an offensive lineman plays in a game. Like, we can see if they give up sacks, we can do that stuff. But in general, what was the return on the first performance for Kingsley Sumataya?
You know, I think they're still highly encouraged. I don't think he necessarily had – I mean, if you were going to grade the Ravens' performance in and of itself – I'd say it was average. It was a C at best. And there's definitely room for improvement, because the one thing I thought learned from the first quarter to the fourth is the game is much quicker at this level than I think what he was prepared for. And you've got to be in physical shape and mental shape as well to play 60 minutes of football against a tough defense. That was a very, very physical defense. And so holding his own was, you know, at times a success, but he's got to be able to do that just play in and play out. And I think it's always going to be, you know, when you look at him through the lens, you see Joe Tooney and you see Creed Humphrey and you see Trey Smith. Man, I don't want to say that's Mount Rushmore, but it's pretty close, right? And so you're looking at these guys and thinking, man, I've got to play at that level. Well, that's not going to come. Certainly not in week one, and maybe not in his rookie year, to be honest with you. But I think they're definitely encouraged by how hard he's working and his ability to learn. There were things I was told that he did absolutely wrong in the first quarter that by the fourth quarter he was executing properly. So a guy's ability to learn that quickly, you're talking about in the span of, you know, 3 hour game, is encouraging. And so I think we're going to see good things out of him. But, you know, is he there yet? Well, not yet. You know, but I want to see how the month of September goes with him.
Yeah, it'll be something to watch. Bengals game. It's that 3:25 national slot in the late afternoon on Sunday, Dan. We're excited about the call. You guys have the radio network tonight has your Chief Kingdom show. That's at 5 o'clock, just before the Royals tonight. So you can find that right here on KFH. We appreciate it, Dan.
Yeah,
I think we all like to lay the points here for the Chiefs against the Bengals. Get them while the getting's good. Dan, we appreciate it, and we'll talk again next week.
You bet, guys. Go Chiefs.
There goes Dan Israel. A lot of great stuff there. If you missed any of it, check it out on the Odyssey app. You can also go back and watch it again on the 12 News Connected app. You can go back to KFH Radio and watch it again, listen to it again. Great stuff, man. It's been a while with a full NFL weekend since we've come back to the Chiefs. So glad to get that all caught up and a look ahead there with Dan Israel. We're going to come back. We have plenty to talk about. We can begin to look ahead, I think, now for K-State KU football this week. We covered what they did in the past yesterday. Now moving forward, what do we need to see? We'll have that Maybe a look around the NFL as well. Maybe something on this Tyreek Hill story. I don't know what to make of that, but a lot to potentially get to on the show today. Your calls, the IHOP hotline is back open at 869-1240. IHOP bringing you its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal still through September 15th. Check that out. We'll be back. It's all Brockton Caster, more Sports Daily right after this. All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. A couple of headlines, and I don't know if we'll have time to get into these today. Puka Nacua, who's been hurt for the Rams, at least 4 weeks on his injury. Tyreek Hill, the police have released the body cam footage of his incident before the game on Sunday. Certainly didn't impact his abilities on the field, but you can take a look at all of that. Kadarius Toney has signed. He's signing with the Browns. That's actually a pretty interesting fit. And Deshaun Watson is accused in a new sexual assault lawsuit. So those are some of the headlines out there today. I don't know if we'll have time to get into any of them today, because I do think it's with a Friday game, we need to start looking at KU and K-State football now, as the dust has settled on a week that I think, you know, both teams would probably tell you they were a little disappointed in their performances. Now, K-State ended up winning the game on the road in Tulane, so maybe they're not. But I think if we're being honest, the vibe of the, you know, two dozen or so K-State fans out at the fair yesterday was like, that wasn't very good. I would agree. KU did not, you know, win in a game that you felt the same way. I think going into this week, Tommy, I am pretty stunned that K-State is a 7-point favorite at home against Arizona. That seems too much for me. Get to them in a second. For KU, they're playing UNLV. UNLV has been off to a, I don't know if it's a surprising start for people that follow them, but it's a good start. A big win over Houston on the road included, and then they had a cupcake last week. But they come into Children's Mercy Park on Friday. Remember, both of these games are Friday this week. We'll have Shreya Slada tomorrow to help us, you know, look back and look ahead too. Kansas needs to beat the crap out of UNLV. I think, you know, like to get us back in the good vibes, I think they need to put it on UNLV in that game. I don't know if you agree with that. Then that's without watching a second of UNLV football, but I don't really care, quite honestly. This needs to be a get right game for Kansas, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, I think that you can go back and look at the Guaranteed Rate Bowl a year ago with the Jayhawks and UNLV. I mean, they faced off against each other in that bowl game back in December, and the Jayhawks put up 49 points. Of course, that was a different quarterback entirely for Kansas. And, you know, so things have changed 9 months later. There's no doubt about that. But one thing that hasn't changed is that Barry Odom has done a nice job as the head coach at UNLV. You know, it looked like for Kansas, I mean, I remember that bowl game. The Jayhawks jumped out to a really big lead, and UNLV never quit. Like they battled back, and it became a 13-point win for the Jayhawks when it looked like for a while that it could end up being a whole lot more. So they're going to have a test against UNLV. They've got, I think, from an offensive point of view, the biggest priority for the Jayhawks this week has got to be, we need to unlock our offense, and we need to unlock it now. There's no more waiting. The time is up. The grace period is up. We have to unlock our offense and let them loose and figure out the best possible way to get points up on the board. That's going to be by running the football. It's going to be by Devin Neal. It's going to be by Daniel Hyshaw. It's going to be by Sevion Morrison. It's going to be running the football. That's the best opportunity that the Jayhawks have to put points on the board, because then it's going to take some of that pressure off of Jalen Daniels. They hopefully will soften up the defense a little bit to allow Jalen Daniels to have a little bit better of a chance to connect with his receivers.
It's fascinating because You said unlock, and my first reaction was like, no, because unlocking it is what they were trying to do with bombs. But then as you finish, I agree. Unlocking it might be running the ball 40 times. That may be the offense. And I think what we've seen through a couple of games now is that that can be the offense, right? The offense this year might be. It is, and I keep making it. It's like a role reversal for them in K-State. Kansas, to me, based on what we've seen, run the ball, play good defense, take care of the football. That will win them a lot of games this year. That may not be what we expected with Jalen Daniels back. That may not be what we anticipated, and it's very early in this season. But based on what we've seen, that very clearly seems to be the path to them to be the most effective they can be. Saying they need to beat UNLV badly, that's not an indictment on UNLV, by the way, for me. It's not at all. It is 100% a, if KU's going to make a run and consistently beat Big 12 teams, they're going to need to beat UNLV badly at home. They just are. And what does that look like? I think it looks a little different than maybe we thought it would, but they're significantly better defensively. They're good on the line. They have all the running backs we already knew about. Jalen Daniels doesn't look that good anyway. Flex on him by running the ball. Flex on him by controlling the clock. I'll tell you right now, the over-under on that game, Tommy, is 57.5. That under might be my favorite bet of the week.
It's only because their bowl game was a final score of 49-36 back in December. That's why.
But if you've watched a second of KU football this year, you know they're not a team that looks to be playing toward the over in games. Now, UNLV put 72 up on Utah Tech last week. The Houston score was 27-7. Houston just took Oklahoma to the brink. So, like, I would envision grind it out. Now, Kansas may put up some points here. I don't know about UNLV's run defense, but if it better had be on the ground. And that is not a protect Jalen Daniels. That is not anything other than the strength of Kansas, and we've only seen two games, one of them non-cupcake, is going to be controlling the clock, playing good defense, controlling the line of scrimmage, and utilizing your incredible backfield. Even with what we know Jalen Daniels has done in the past, that will be the best version of Kansas football this year. It's just, it's not what we expected, but it is not too early to totally change our expectations for this team. If they can do that, they're going to put themselves in a position to win every Big 12 game they play. That's how Kansas State has stayed so relevant over the years, right? They almost always play good defense. They almost always are good on the lines, and they run the ball effectively. That's what Kansas has. It's different than what we thought, but it's right there in front of us.
Yeah, it's not too early for them to lean back into what makes them dynamic, but it could be too late if they don't pull the trigger on it.
I agree.
This week. And I think that those are, it goes back to what I said, I think those are the main conversations in those, you know, coaching offices in Lawrence this week is, you know, getting Lance Leipold and Jeff Grimes together. And, you know, there have been some growing pains offensively with the play calling. I am still not happy, and I don't think any Kansas fan, anybody that follows the team, would be happy with the play calling on Saturday because, you know, I'm a full believer that the play calling cost the Jayhawks the game. Did Jalen Daniels look great? No, he didn't. But he was put in bad positions. Would he have looked better had the situations been better for him in play calling? Maybe somewhat, but there were some things that I think he was still shaking off the rust, and hopefully that rust continues to be shaken off this week for sure. I'm not ready yet, and I've seen chatter on social media. I'm not ready yet to say Jalen Daniels looks cooked, you know, or looks washed, or whatever phrase you want to use. I'm not ready to say that at this point. I just think that he looks rusty, and I think that he was put in some poor positions by the offensive coordinator there. So that's got to be the main topic of discussion for the Jayhawks. On top of that, and I say putting Jalen Daniels in better situations. I mentioned this yesterday. When Daniels is going to throw the football, which shouldn't be as many times as he did against you know, when they played last week against Illinois, they've got to make sure that they distribute out the ball to more than just the wideouts. They've got to find other weapons at tight end and running back for him to be able to get the football too. So those are all things I think that they need to be game planning for and getting ready for this weekend against when they're playing UNLV this weekend.
It is too early to say Jalen Daniels is cooked or washed, yeah, or whatever you want to say. Way too early. It is not too early to strongly consider that he will not be the quarterback he was the last time we saw him healthy when he was a Heisman candidate. You've got to prepare for that possibility. Just like any team has to prepare, just like the Jets have to prepare for that possibility with Aaron Rodgers. Right. We haven't seen the guy play in a long time, right? So the good news with that is it doesn't mean that it's true. It means that it's okay if it's even partially true, because the strength of this team is going to be a little bit different than we thought it was. It's going to be things that don't, you know, the Jalen Daniels is going to be a weapon to some capacity, and they need him to throw the ball. I'm telling you right now, unless UNLV and Kansas's first three offensive possessions just brick walls them on the defensive line and doesn't allow anything, I don't want to see Jalen Daniels throw the ball very much. I would almost rather reverse it, right? Maybe they build a big lead through the run and then they throw it just to try and shake some cobwebs off after things are safely within reach. But why would you even mess with it at this point? Kansas is going to be able to win Big 12 games if they control the lines of scrimmage and play good defense. It's the test and the history of football. That's always been true. And it appears to be their strength. So we'll see it against UNLV. K-State, on the other hand. Arizona. Honestly, Tommy, whatever it takes. I don't care what they do. I don't care what the outcome is. That's why I don't like the 7-point line. It's like a just win the game somehow kind of a thing for K-State. Now, remember, this one doesn't count to the Big 12 because this was scheduled before Arizona joined. So as we look at it, it's almost a resume game for K-State if they think they can be in the mix for an at-large. But I don't look at this. Where are you with 7 points? I that doesn't make a lot. I don't like it at all. Feels like K-State needs to win by 1 point.
I don't like it. I think that Arizona, at least offensively, has a little bit more firepower than Tulane did. And, you know, unless the Wildcats can adjust in their secondary, they did not have a good game defensively against Tulane, especially against the passing attack that the Green Wave had. Arizona's is better than Tulane's is. So they've got to fix that quickly. If they want to win the game. But if you're talking about the spread, I don't like that number either. I'm either going to stay away from it entirely, or I kind of like Arizona and I'll take the points.
Yeah,
I mean, that may change between now and Friday, but at least right now, that's what I like.
I think the line's going to move. I would be stunned if it's not down to like 5 by the time they play that game. I don't know if Arizona is better than Tulane offensively. Tulane was really good offensively, but they're almost certainly going to be better than Tulane defensively, just because it's more athletes, all the things of a Power 5 school, all of that. K-State won't be able to make the mistakes that they made against Tulane and survive this game. Avery Johnson got to be good right out of the gates, not just in the second half. That is a fascinating game. I just cannot believe it's a 7-point spread right now. I will be stunned. If you're going to bet K-State, do not bet that game until 1 second before kickoff, because I have to think that line's going to move to Arizona. Arizona wasn't overly impressive last weekend either, don't get me wrong, but we know their expectations coming into the year. They're expected to be a contender in the Big 12, and I think that they are. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. And we'll look at some of these uneasy headlines around the NFL here this morning. Al Brockton Caster at Sports Daily. Don't go away. All right, welcome back here, Sports Daily. Glad to be with you on this Tuesday. Thanks to Mike Gillespie of Kings of Kauffman joining us to talk a little Royals. Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, joining us to talk a little Chiefs. If you missed either of those, go back to the Odyssey app. Just a few minutes here, Tommy. Tyreek Hill, the body camera footage is released. Wild day. He was handcuffed, put on the ground. He makes it to the game, has a great game. We get the body cam footage. Tyreek Hill saying after he wasn't trying to be disrespectful. I would say a moderate tone of disrespect, certainly not anything to me that would warrant that sort of reaction. I don't know. I think this can easily be everybody overreacted a little bit kind of a situation. It's a difficult one though. It's a difficult one, and it's one where people can evaluate it. I think it's a hard job that, you know, law enforcement has, and sometimes extra patience is just a part of the job. This officer did not have that extra patience in that sense, but Tyreek Hill, you know, mouth off that window, roll down your window when they tell you to roll down your window, all those things. It's unfortunate that it happened, and I'm glad that it didn't escalate to anything further.
Well, Tyreek Hill has done some terrible things in his life. This was not one of them. And, you know, the reaction, I don't think, was warranted.
Do we know how fast he was
driving?
By law
enforcement, I don't know. But watching the body cam footage, you know, basically from start to finish yesterday, there was, in my mind, nothing that warranted Tyreek Hill from, number one, being pulled out of the car, number two, being on the ground, number three, right, being put in handcuffs. And then you've got Calais Campbell and Jonnu Smith, also whom are threatened with arrest. And, you know, there's aggressive law enforcement approaching them as well. And I understand, I've never been in the shoes of law enforcement, so I can't relate to that. You know, I don't understand the role in securing a scene and all the different, you know, threats that are,
well,
I've never been in that world before, so I can't relate to that. But what I do know is that it was disappointing, I think, the way that the whole thing went down. And I don't believe that Tyreek Hill especially deserved that kind of treatment.
I you know, it wasn't that long ago, and I don't recall where a state trooper, I think it was in Colorado, was just gunned down for no reason. Like, it is a high tense, high emotional experience on both sides every time somebody's pulled over. You ever been pulled over, you know how nervous, sure, you are. I mean, we're two white guys. Like, we don't probably need to be as nervous, right? History tells us that.
Well, and so, like, one other thing that I'll say, there, I can think of one time specifically that I was having a bad day and I got pulled over for speeding. I was probably more disrespectful to the police officer than Tyreek Hill was. You know, I mouthed off a little bit. I felt like the police officer, you know, wanted to give me a lecture a little bit, and I was not in the mood for a lecture. And I told him, and I was like, give me the ticket and let me get on with my day. I mean, I was pretty rude to him. You know, that police officer had patience with me, and it didn't escalate to that.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I watched that body cam footage, and I'm like, man, what he said, what could his tone have been better? Sure. But it didn't warrant, you know,
well,
I think the reaction.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He was asked to do something that he didn't do in rolling down his window, which is the
point. He did.
But
there was no time given. I feel like it was, you know, you need to roll down your window or I'll pull you out of the car. And then, you know what? I'm just going to pull you out of the car.
Yeah. It
switched pretty quickly.
I hate that these situations happen. I am very thankful that this one didn't escalate further than that. I have appreciated Tyreek Hill after the fact and going out of his way to talk about how much he says he wants to be a cop, and you know, he's showing respect in the aftermath. I would imagine that officer, and I don't know, we got to look at his history too, like, what's his history. I'm just glad this didn't escalate any further than that. Strange day, didn't affect Tyreek Hill on the field. Real quick, Tommy, Deshaun Watson, another charge. He's not any good anymore at football. I don't know what's going to happen with all this with the Browns. Like, worst contract ever.
Yeah, this is going to go down in history as the worst contract in NFL history. There's no doubt about that.
It was the worst contract if he had no off-the-field issues, because he's not very good anymore. Now you add this on to it. Another accuser, this time of assault, not just of, you know, the other lesser charges. This one's pretty serious. So, all right. Those are the other headlines. Didn't want to spend a whole lot of time with them, but they're out there if you want to look more into it. So we got them covered. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the networks today. Next on Sports Day.